This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boon Wurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Ready or Not is brought to you by Ready or Not. You can shop our go-to guides now at readyornot.au.
This isn't a point in my career where I can have children. And because I had a miscarriage, I think I was like, well, now I want to have a baby. I was 8 weeks pregnant when I was doing the shoot with Emrata. I kind of thought I could do it all. I went back to work within 2 weeks. I was scared to go for a walk in the pram because I was scared a car was going to come hit her. I hate motherhood. This is too hard. For me to actually believe I'm a good mum, it's taken me 6 years. It makes me feel emotional now, just like it was instant bond and connection.
I often find myself wondering, what on earth did mothers do before incredible people like Hello Darling co-founder Bridget Gale were open enough to share their stories? Where did they find comfort? Where did they see themselves? This episode has so much, it's difficult to know where to begin. Starting a business at 21, working with the likes of Emrata, miscarriage, postnatal anxiety and depression, intrusive thoughts, returning to work after 2 weeks, moving across the country with a 4-week turnaround after receiving a business proposal that she couldn't refuse, going from swimwear to tech startup, finding the transition from 1 to 2 easier than none to one, emerging from the dark to find the light. If you're a new mother who is struggling, this is essential listening. As you'll hear, it got better for Bridget, and I hope it gets better for you too. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the reflective and remarkable Bridget Gale. Bridget, you started your swimwear brand when you were just 21, which maybe at the time, if a 21-year-old did that when I was 21, I wouldn't have thought much about it. But now I'm like, that's really young to start a business. How did you do it?
Yeah, I think I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was at school or when I was leaving school. I didn't do my TE. All my friends went to uni. I didn't. I just went to kind of full-time work straight away. I had no idea what I wanted to do. And being from Perth in WA, I was a beach girl and just had so many bikinis before I launched. It's something I knew really well. And at, I think I was 14 when I got a part-time job just to support my bikini habit. And then I would catch the bus into Claremont to go to Zimmerman every day after school just so I could like stare at their bathers and just like feel the fabric. So it's something I knew really well. And then when I was 21, I decided to move to Bali to work with my manufacturer there. So I was there for 3.5 years and started Amour and Savette.
Amazing. So you've worked with some of the most famous models and you've been featured in some of the biggest magazines in the world. How did you grow your brand?
Well, when I started, there was only Facebook had just come out. I think they were around for 4 years. There was no Instagram. Online shopping wasn't huge. So I started off, I opened a couple of stores in Bali. I opened 2 stores in Bali when I was there for 3.5 years. And then I moved back to Perth, opened a store there. And that's when we grew online. Instagram came about and we started wholesaling to the US pretty early on. And that's when we were contacted by Jesse James Decker, who's a country music singer over there. She was our first collaboration and that did quite well. And then I reached out to Emrata's agent over there for a collaboration. So I focused a lot in the US. It grew quite quickly in the US, selling to retailers over there and attending Miami Swim Show. So it's been, yeah, in a short period of time, it had been a ride for sure.
And did you consider yourself a business person before this, or did you more go into this with the creative lens and you just figured out the rest of it as you went?
I think that I've always had like an entrepreneurial mindset from a young age. Like I was used to go around neighborhoods selling raffle tickets that I'd made up just so I could like get money and grow some carrot, go to Bunnings and grow some carrot seeds. So I was always, and then at high school, I was going and buying secondhand jewelry and recreating it and then selling it. So I was always kind of like doing things like that, but in a creative way. And then it kind of just like grew on me, I would say.
And what would you say when you look back at that now was the biggest highlight or the best memory?
Definitely when I flew over to LA to shoot with Emrata for our campaign shoot. And that was like a real pinch me moment. I've had a couple of pinch me moments. That was definitely one of them. We had J-Lo's stylist on board as well. And it was in a beautiful home. And I was kind of like, wow, like this feels very surreal. But then also like just seeing my customers wearing a Morin sweat at the beach, like at my local beach, would always like make me feel so good and so proud of what I had created. And I think, you know, having people come up to me and saying, I've had your swimwear for like 5 or 10 years because the quality is so good. Just small little achievements like that always felt really good as well. Not always like the huge milestones. But I think that I've always been a person that didn't really stop with each milestone as well. Like I found it really hard to, when I had achieved one goal, it's like, okay, well, what's the next thing? I didn't really stop and go, okay, wow, I should be really proud of myself, which is probably, you know, a flaw in me, when I think that people should be like quite proud of every little achievement along the way. Like it's the journey. It's not just always about, you know, the final goal.
It's so hard to reflect on it at the time, isn't it? I think that's also something you learn in motherhood, is that it's very hard to reward yourself.
Oh, 100%.
And so eventually the idea of motherhood enters the picture for you. Where is your business at that point?
So I was 28 when I unexpectedly fell pregnant, but had a miscarriage very early on. I was quite scared at that point because I was like, this isn't a point in my career where I can have children, like I really need to focus. And then I was like, okay, now I want to, because I had a miscarriage, I think I was like, well, now I want to have a baby, because I was just so disappointed when I lost it. But then we ended up getting engaged, married 7 months later. And then 2 months after our wedding, I fell pregnant. I was 8 weeks pregnant when I was doing the shoot with Emrata in the US. So I was very tired. And that whole pregnancy was, it was enjoyable, but it was also like I was working with Emrata for that whole season. And it was a lot of pressure. It was quite a crucial part in my career at that point. I remember driving to the hospital to have Marley on the way, and I was stopping off at Australia Post to deliver orders, and he was like, you look like you're about to pop, surely you're about to have a baby right now. And I was like, yeah, I'm just on my way to the hospital to have a baby.
This is the first delivery. I've got another one coming.
Yeah, I'm just like dropping off this first one first.
Oh my god, much easier to deliver. I wish it felt and looked like that. How did you find navigating your loss as a business owner? Did it sort of happen quite quickly and it was a bit of a whirlwind, or was that quite a challenging time?
That was a really dark time when I lost the baby. I feel like I struggled a lot for 6 months. I feel like I was in a really dark place. None of my friends had babies or miscarriages, so I don't think they understood what was going on. I feel like it was a really hard topic for people to come up and talk about with me. It was so taboo. And I was very open about talking about it because I wanted it to be something that women could speak about, because I felt so alone during that time. You know, people didn't know how to approach it, and I don't blame them, but it was also very like lonely during that time. And I had so many emotions. What's wrong with me? I had PCOS, so it's like, am I never going to be able to carry? I think that's one of the reasons why I wanted to fall pregnant so quickly after, because I just wanted to prove to myself that I could fall pregnant. I went and had a DNC, and then 2 days later I was on a plane to Hong Kong going to the swim trade show just to like distract myself. But yeah, I thought it was like a very hard moment.
And did that miscarriage affect how you felt in your pregnancy mentally? Was it a time of anxiety for you, or were you just trying to focus on work, or where was your head at then?
Yeah, I was very anxious. I kept going, and especially because I was traveling during that time, my first trimester, I was in the US and then I went to Europe, and I kept taking pregnancy tests, like just so, you know, the ones that I could see the numbers are growing, like 4 weeks plus, 6 weeks plus, 8 weeks. And then I kept, when I was back home, I kept going and having ultrasounds, because I had a silent miscarriage. So there was no bleeding. I had cramping, but I didn't know that I had miscarried until I went and had an ultrasound to hear the baby's heartbeat and they told me. So yeah, definitely anxious up until I could feel her kicking. And then like it was the reassurance the rest of the pregnancy. Every time I felt her move, then I was like at ease again.
And it's a little bit different clocking off from your paid work when you're not the boss, because for a lot of people, you're able to just shut the laptop. You're away for, say, 6 months, 9 months, a year, whatever it is. And you don't really have to think about that business. But as a business owner, how did you approach maternity leave?
First time and second time around was very different. With Marley, I kind of thought I could do it all. I had an office. I had about 3 staff working for me. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to stop working. Like, I'll just bring the bassinet into the office and I'll just feed her and put her to sleep and work when I can. And I'll be all like, be able to function. So I had a real rude shock when Marley was born. So yeah, when she was actually born, it was a rude awakening. And I didn't handle the stress. I couldn't stop. I had staff, but I think that I could have handled it better. So I had Marley and had a lot of anxiety, you know, those early days, first time you don't know what you're doing. I had a lot of intrusive thoughts. So, you know, scared that someone was going to drop her when they were holding her. I was scared to go for a walk in the pram because I was scared a car was going to come hit her. So my way of dealing with it was to get back to work pretty quick. I went back to work within 2 weeks. So no, my husband was working from home at the time. And when I say went back to work, I was going into the office for meetings and didn't stop on emails, but I was still breastfeeding her and trying to contribute. But I just had so much anxiety that I just, my fight or flight was to leave. It was to just ignore what I was doing and go back to work because I thought work was easier than dealing with the baby. And that wasn't the best way to handle that situation.
And so what else do you remember most from those early days? I think with Marley, you also had postnatal depression.
Yes. I was so in the trenches. I didn't realize at the time my mental state and how bad it was. I knew that a friend told me, and thank God she did, when I went to have, because I was always a maternal person, always from a young age, wanted to breastfeed, wanted to be pregnant, just loved babies. And then one of my friends before I had Marley told me that it's quite common that you don't always bond with your baby straight away. It takes time. And I'm glad that she told me that, because when Marley was born, I didn't feel that connection and bond with her. And so I struggled and I was just waiting and waiting. And I had, you know, awful thoughts like of, you know, I just wanted to go back to me and Luke, my husband. I hate motherhood. I hate being a mom. This is too hard. All the anxiety and all the intrusive thoughts. And it wasn't actually until I struggled for a long time, I would say, very dark days, and work was very stressful as well. But it wasn't until I couldn't get my head wrapped around having a second baby till she was about 2. And I had no idea. I think Marley was 12 months and people were saying, oh, we're going to have another baby. And in my head, I'm going, are you crazy? Like, how can you want another baby? Like, this is fucked. And I got my head around it, fell pregnant with Hendrix, and the anxiety started to come back because I started remembering those early days of how hard it was. And my midwife came over. It must have been around maybe 30 weeks, you know, to fill out your numbers on how you're feeling. And all my numbers were very low. And she said, oh, it was the same midwife I had with Marley. And she said, why are your numbers so low? And I said, because of how hard it was last time. And I kind of ran through the story with her. And she said, did you talk to anyone about this? And I said, no. And so she referred me to a psych to see at King Eddie's Hospital, where I gave birth to Marley. And she said, it sounds like you had postnatal depression during that time. And if it's not diagnosed or unresolved, it can carry on for a long time. And I felt like it went on for over a year. But we put things in place to help me support so that I could transition a little bit easier into when I was having Hendrix, and that kind of became peace of mind at that time.
And before we get to then what this second motherhood experience was like with Hendrix, you say it about the 2-year mark with Marley was when you wrapped your head around having another baby. Were you feeling better emotionally then, or was it just that you'd had enough space from the birth that you sort of thought, okay, well, we do want another kid, so I guess we better?
Yeah, definitely. You know, and I remember my dad saying, well, why do you want a, you know, second baby if it was, and I was like, well, because I don't want an only child. I want her to have siblings, and I didn't want that huge gap for sure. Like, it was definitely the time to have another baby. And so I felt like it was time, but then I was also really excited when I found out that I was pregnant with Hendrix. So definitely it was like a mixed emotional bag of, am I ready to do this again? It is the right time. I feel like I have to, but also part of me really wants to. I think I started forgetting, and I guess that's human, like it's science that we start forgetting how hard things can be. Soon as you start getting your head wrapped around, like, oh, I've got this now, or like, it's getting a little bit easier.
Yeah.
She was quite a hard toddler as well. So it was emotionally, as girls are. Yeah, it was definitely a bit of both for sure.
I think my second pregnancy has been a bit more emotional and stressful in a lot of ways, because the more you know, the sort of more you don't know, I feel. You're like, you semi feel prepared for birth because you've done it, and you semi feel prepared for this or that because you've done it. But I also have this sense of like, I have no idea what this next baby's going to be like. I know what sleepless nights feel like. Do you think that played into it for you?
Yes. I think that also when I was pregnant, I remember kind of being a little bit sad, like I was going to lose, like my one baby is now going to turn into two. And I remember saying goodbye to her as I was going into hospital with Hendrix. And it's always such an emotional time knowing that's the last time they're going to be by themselves as a only child. And I was so afraid of what was to come in terms of managing two and, yeah, like that special time with your firstborn. But then I remember after I had Hendrix, it was like, I definitely prefer two than one now. So
that's nice. That's very comforting.
It can be so overwhelming, especially when you're pregnant. What's this going to look like now? And going back to, you know, step one, when the hard age was, you know, I think looking back now, after having a toddler, the newborn stage, besides the sleep, is the easy part because they're sleeping and feeding. It's now like, great, now I'm going to go back to toddler stage, you know?
That's actually what I fear most. It's funny you say that. I think just yesterday I was saying to a friend, now a newborn does feel easier to me than a toddler. So then you do meet Hendrix. You have the perspective shift that you've started to receive help for what you now realize with hindsight was postnatal depression. How do you approach this second time of motherhood? And what do you remember most from the early days with Hendrix?
I remember him coming out and, oh, it makes me feel emotional now. Just like it was instant bond and connection. I remember he came out, he was quite blue. So they took him over to the incubator. And I just remember like screaming and crying, like, bring me my baby, bring me my baby. And he just came onto my chest. And it was just like this relief. And also, this is what other mothers have experienced before. This is what they were talking about. Like, I thought, maybe it's all bullshit and people, you know, because I remember saying when I was struggling with Marley to every mum, oh, how are you going? And everyone was like, oh, I'm in such a love bubble. No one was saying anything bad. And I was like, is this me or is everybody lying? So when Hendrix came out and I had that bond, I was just like in euphoria. It was like, I've never experienced this kind of love before. So it was a completely different time. And I'd set myself up. It was actually March 2020. So COVID had just hit. And it was actually, you know, a blessing in disguise for me because I got out of my office. I let go of my staff, which wasn't an easy choice, just so that I wasn't managing anyone. And I decided to take 6 weeks off. So I put onto the website that I was on maternity leave and I'm not going to be shipping any orders. And those 6 weeks, it was a really beautiful time because I was a lot more relaxed second time round, knowing what you're doing. I think with every first time mum, it's, you know, even if you've got a beautiful sleeping baby, like Marley started sleeping through the night at 7 weeks, it doesn't necessarily mean that your anxiety is going to get any easier or your worries of all their noises or if they're okay. Like, I didn't basically hear Marley cry till she was 6 months. She wasn't a crying baby. She slept and I was still struggling so much. So I don't think it always, you know, it can be within you as well and what kind of person you are. So I prepared a lot for, I had the worst and now it was better than I expected it to be. So it was a really beautiful time. Marley was at daycare so that I could have that one-on-one time with Hendrix, you know, on the couch, basically just sleeping and feeding and gazing at him and in awe. So it was a really nice turnaround.
God, that must have been so healing. What did it look like when you started to return to paid work?
After 6 weeks, I got back on the emails and, you know, started promoting again, doing photo shoots. At that point, all my photo shoots were in Bali, but I was just kind of sending my samples over to my photographer to shoot. I was being really conscious of how much my workload was. I knew that I was going to take a step back in the business and I wasn't going to put that pressure on myself to get back exactly where I was before. I knew that the first 12 months were going to be, I will do what I can. And I just, as newborn babies nap every, I think it was 2 or 3 hours, I was working when he was napping. So working during the day when he was napping, spending time with him when he wasn't, going for walks. And then I was also working in the evenings. But it actually ended up being one of my most successful years, that year that he was born, because I kind of restructured my business anyway. And so the financial stress was taken off me as well. So kind of worked out in my favor to make the moves that I did.
Lots of those mindset shifts we only learn through going through things. Do you think the benefit of hindsight of, I guess, trusting yourself more or accepting what you could put out into the world in a paid work capacity and also valuing that postpartum time, do you think that learning that with hindsight really helped set you up for this postpartum and return to work experience?
Yes, I think that number one should be your mental health. Like, you know, you're not going to be productive in a workspace or productive as a mother if you're not looking after yourself. And so that's what I learned, like, the first time. You know, I was expecting too much from myself. I thought I could do it all. And I was jeopardized. And, you know, like, I still have a lot of guilt there with Marley that I did the things that I did and didn't spend that time with her to bond. And I think in hindsight, I should have been at home with her for however long that would have taken. And I know that it's hard for some people to stop full-time work when they're running their own business. Like, sometimes you just can't stop. But I think that you need to manage your workload and your mental state as number one priority.
And you were seeing a psychologist towards the end of that pregnancy. Did you put anything in place in case you experienced the same thing? Were you still seeing your psychologist postpartum second time around? Or was it just such a different experience that you actually didn't need to?
No, I didn't. I didn't go back there. She was, if this happens again or, you know, come back. But I think I just put things in place, ways to slow down, ways to, you know, put my business kind of taking a step back, expectations on myself, and also support, like, I think was a huge one. Like, I didn't have much support around me when Marley was born. None of my friends had babies. I was the first. My husband was a good support. He was great, but he was just trying to figure out what he was doing as well. But if I was in a struggling position again, then I would have gone back for sure. But I knew that I was in a really good place to be able to manage where I was at that point.
And so you've had a bit of a business pivot recently. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so I'd had a Morin's Vet for 14 years and I was looking at selling it late last year. I was ready for new changes and challenges. I started working on a new brand called Salicheer about 12 months ago, which was skincare and scrubs made from ocean botanicals. And it was in January this year that a friend of mine, who I've known for 10 years from Perth, but he'd recently moved over to Sydney to start a business, asked to catch up with me in Perth. And we'd always kind of just caught up to talk about business and new projects that we were doing. He was at a concept idea of a dating app where you choose a bestie and they swipe for you. And he'd been working on it for about 6 months, just a concept, no brand name, nothing. And then he asked me if I would be interested in coming in as his business partner and co-founder. So that kind of threw a spanner in the works. But at the same time, it was kind of perfect timing as to where I was at with Amor and Sabet. And my hesitation was Salicia because I'd built something that I was really proud of again. But in my heart, I knew that I was itching for more. And he said that, you know, if you decide to come on with me, you would have to, one, move to Sydney with your family, and two, put everything else on ice. So I thought about it for a little bit. I thought, you know what, whether I come back to Salicia in 5, 10 years or whatever that looks like, I haven't launched the brand. So Amor and Sabet was kind of like an easy decision because I was at that pivotal stage. And so in February, I came over to took me around Sydney and we ran through the concept. And then 4 weeks later, we had moved the whole family over here.
Wow. Okay. So tell us about this app and this concept that then you obviously are a big part of now, because you must have been damn well convinced that it was going to do well.
I believed my business partner, Brendan, before any of this. I knew what he would do would be successful. And then, you know, I've never been on dating apps. This is before my time, but I had always grabbed my friend's phone to swipe for them. So I knew that we were kind of fixing a problem in terms of all I hear from my friends that they're tired of the laborious swiping and chats never leading into dates. And we've kind of removed all that, where you pick a bestie, they swipe for you and pick your dates. You don't see the other person's profile or chat to them before. And it's kind of like you go there to meet for the first time. So we're taking everything back to like old traditional ways of a chance meeting like experience, where you meet someone at a bar and you start chatting to see if there's chemistry in person, rather than chatting online and not seeing if there's chemistry or if you're vibing. So we've been working on that since March, and we just got App Store approval and hopefully launching this week or next week.
That's so exciting. So it's called Hello Darling. I have some ideas, I think, as to why, but why do you think that it can sometimes be beneficial for one of your best friends to swipe for you instead of doing it for yourself?
Well, we think that your bestie knows you better than an algorithm. So they know your type, and we think that they have their heart out for you and always looking for the best for you. So we're trying to remove all that algorithm that other traditional dating apps have, and we just want your bestie to be that person in the middle that brings you together.
And so you're coming into this exciting sort of ideation and production phase of a new business, but this time you have 2 kids. You have a lot more lived experience in business and in life. What was it like bringing the business to life this year alongside mothering?
It's definitely thrown another spanner in the works, like as life happens. And each year, like you think, oh, you know, Marley's in year one now, so it will get easier because she's full-time at school. But I mean, she was full-time at daycare from 12 months on, and so was Hendrix. It's definitely been different in a sense that although I'm still working for myself and this is my business, Hello Darling is my business, at Amor and Sabet, I was working from home and I was picking the kids up from school at 3 o'clock every day and then coming home. This time it's been, you know, I'm leaving work at 7:30 in the morning to commute into the city, going to Surry Hills, and then I don't get home till 6 p.m. at night. So I'm not seeing my kids as much as I used to, and that can be very challenging. You can feel guilty, but I've kind of made a promise to myself, as long as I'm there to tuck them in every night, I'm happy. We've actually just got an au pair over from Germany to help us with that workload because we don't have family here from either side. So my husband, who works from home, was picking the kids up to school care at 5 o'clock, but definitely having help and support. And she's only recently come the last month. Before that, it was been, you know, trying to find the balance between with your partner as well can be very challenging. And then also worrying about the children and their adjusting as well, while you're trying to do something in the workforce. It's like the juggle of, am I a good enough mom? Am I good enough at work? It's the constant pull of, am I able to do it all, and do I feel good enough? But I would say it's taken me this long to actually say to myself, I'm a good mom. Like, to actually believe it now, and I'm not perfect, but for me to actually believe I'm a good mom, it's taken me 6 years to actually get there.
And what do you think that is? Is it time? Is it self-work? What's led you to finally accept that you are a good mom?
I think lowering the expectations as to doing it all. I think the fact that I'm conscious of, am I not a good enough mom? I think that says, like, you're worrying about that. You're making sure that you are. Like, it's not just not a concern to you. The fact that you're even concerned about that, I think, is you're trying to do the best that you can. And I think that I've also learned along the way to lower your expectations. You can't, you know, as long as they are loved and fed and safe and happy, which they are, I think that's really beautiful. And I think that all mums should be proud of themselves and not be so hard on themselves. Like, what is a perfect mum? You know, I don't think anyone knows, or I don't think
that would be different for everyone anyway.
Yeah. Even, you know, like being a stay-at-home mum, I think would be very tough. Like, it's not all about being able to work and have children. Like, being a stay-at-home mom is a full-time job in itself. So I think I've done a lot of, like, self-worth and self-love care, a lot of words of affirmations to get to where I am now. And I'm still not perfect, but I'm getting there for sure.
Oh, it's such a strong message for your kids too, to actually think that you're good enough. So I think that's amazing. What was it like moving across the country? Obviously, everything's more loaded with children. Was there much anxiety in the lead up, or did it feel exciting, or what was it?
There was a lot of anxiety in the build up. Like, it was a 4-week turnaround for putting our house up for rent.
Oh, of course. Of course it was anxiety inducing. It was a quick turnaround.
4 weeks to pack up the house.
At least you didn't have to think about it too much.
And, like, we found a rental online in Sydney, and we hadn't even had a rental inspection to actually see what it looked like from the photos. So we literally just turned up. Our boxes were in the house, and it was, once we got here, it was like, okay, we've kind of just need to find our home, like making a home now. Hendrix had no idea what was going on because he's 3. And as boys do, like, he's been to 3 different daycares this year. But he's just, as long as there's new toys and new friends, he's like, off he goes. Like, he's generally pretty happy and easygoing. Marley, who's 6 and knows what's going on, she did 1 month in year 1 in Perth, and then we had to pull her out and find a new school in Sydney. And we didn't even have a school for her when we came here, because we wanted to go around and see different schools. So she was off school for a couple of weeks. And that was even an experience in itself, because what we're used to back home in Perth was schools with a lot of land and ovals and greenery and playgrounds, where in Sydney, in the city, it's like a concrete jungle. So it was a bit of adjusting for us to get our heads around. But she was quiet for a couple of months, I would say, and I was a bit worried about her, but I think she was just trying to find her feet, and now she's like happy, and she's back into her dance and found new friends. So yeah, it's definitely been an adjustment.
And what advice would you give to parents, particularly of that Marley age or older, of moving to a new place and, I guess, making it feel good and exciting, when in your own head you're probably questioning yourself all the time? Because we do. You shouldn't, but we do.
I think just, like, words of encouragement and making them feel safe and secure is the best way to go about it. I think kids are so resilient at that age. And I also, you know, one of my best friends traveled a lot, even in high school with her family, and she was able to make friends wherever she went because she was put in those situations. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I think, you know, throwing kids into situations at a young age, as long as they're feeling secure and safe, I think it can do, like, make them quite resilient. But just, like, words of encouragement and, you know, telling them how proud you are of them and how they're going to make new friends and how easy they made it last time.
That's such a good adventure too. So I think that's great. And what have been the greatest challenges of operating this new business so far?
I would say being in a different industry. Like, I'm a swimwear designer and I've gone into tech. I'm not a tech savvy person at all. But as I learned, you know, somebody asked me the other day, do I have imposter syndrome? And I would say, you know, like, it's been a challenge going from Amore and Savette, which I've been doing for 14 years as a swimwear designer, into tech, where I don't know anything at all, and try not to be so hard on myself that, like, I'm back to kind of not square one, because I've got so much experience and what I've learned with Amore and Savette. But I remind myself that when I started Amore and Savette, I wasn't a designer. I didn't go to TAFE or uni. I didn't even know how to sew, and I still don't know how to sew, but I was able to learn how to create a product that my customers want. And I'm in the same position now where I don't know how to code, but I'm creating a product that hopefully our users will love. So I'm just trying to navigate my way through and learn as much as possible. I wanted to be in a place where I could learn new skills and challenge myself, and I'm definitely challenging myself.
That's so good. I love it. And what big plans do you have coming up with Hello Darling? Is there any official launches or anything that they're coming up?
So we are launching hopefully next week, and we are launching in Sydney first to begin with. We actually book the dates as well from on behalf of the daters. So we're going to be doing a lot of, like, back-end work, I think, a lot of grunt work. We've got about 1,500 people on our wait list, and it's been going and handing out love notes on car windscreens to get sign-ups. And that's how we've had our wait list, walking like 20 kilometres a day just with QR codes. So it's been great so far, and now we just want to launch so that we can start getting people on dates.
That is a brilliant tactic. I love it. I'm going to have to get some more marketing strategies off you. When you just brought up imposter syndrome, it reminded me of mothers returning to work, and we can often feel like a completely different people to that person that left the office 12 months ago before a child. And I'm thinking this is almost a similar thing when you change industries. What has changing industries taught you about yourself in sort of celebrating your strengths and remembering what you're good at?
It's a good question. I think it comes down to expectation again. And I think us as women and us as mothers have huge expectations on, especially now in the workplace and as a mother, like, we want to have it all. We want to be able to be an incredible mother, and we want to be able to have an incredible career and tick all the boxes. And I think it comes down to expectation as to trying to do your best in both areas without trying to disappoint yourself so much and stop being so hard on yourself. And it's easier said than done, for sure. Like, I'm hard on myself all the time. And I've spoken to a lot of my friends about going back into the workplace after having maybe 12 months off or longer, and they feel like they've lost some of their skill, or there's new people that have come into the industry. So that's also very hard, I can imagine, trying to find your feet again, or not feeling like you were up to where you were before. Or sometimes, you know, your priorities change and your work doesn't seem as important as it used to be after having children. Your priorities change. So I think it's just trying not to be so hard on yourself and have those expectations, but trying to do your best you can at work and your best as, you know, as you can with motherhood. It's just always constant juggling.
I think doing your best but lowering your expectations is a huge one, because nothing stresses a mother out more than, as you said earlier, trying to be perfect when perfection doesn't exist. You obviously took a plunge that some would say, gee, that's brave, that's courageous, I don't know if I could do that in this business venture after motherhood. What would be your top tips for someone that's nervous to take a plunge like you took and enter that next phase of their business life?
I think it's important still to have goals and not to forget yourself in the process, you know, like you were still, and I lost myself for so long just being a mom, and you kind of go back to like what makes you happy, what gives you purpose. And your children definitely give you purpose, but you also just don't want to lose yourself. And I know that a lot of mums are happy to stay at home and be with their children, and that's their purpose, and that's all they want, and that's amazing. But also, if you want a career, then I think it's just as important to follow that those dreams and not let other things stop you, because your family's not going anywhere and you can support them along the journey as well. And I think, you know, it's beautiful that Marley looks up to me and, you know, says like, oh, what do you mean her mummy doesn't work? And I'm like, well, not every mummy works. You know, she's got that mentality already that, you know, mum's boss and mum runs her own business, and I've seen mum work hard. We're hard on ourselves to think we're not around as much as we'd like to be, but they also look up to us. And I think that's really, I'm really proud that she can look up to her mum and say that, you know, she does work really hard and I'm a good role model for her. And I hope that embeds in our children. So I think that you just need to kind of don't stop your own goals and your own needs and purpose just because you have a family. Like, I think you should just keep going and keep going to get where you want to go.
I think that is beautiful advice to end with. If anyone wants to find your new app, Hello Darling, where should they go?
You can go to our social media is My Hello Darling, or our website is hellodarling.com, and you can sign up now to come on our waitlist. But hopefully by the time this launches, we will be live on the App Store.
Congratulations. How exciting. Thank you so much for sharing your story and your wisdom with us.
Thanks for having me, Lucinda.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe, or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.